Okay, Mem Gimel Amid Beis, 15 lines from the end of the page. In the Schattenstein's Gemara, it's 43b2, all the way at the end. Okay, now the Gemara asks a definite question as follows. We know that a woman collects the ksuba. And a woman, like we know, when you write a ksuba, you put a date in the ksuba. Because we need to know, as it says in the ksuba itself, any properties that the husband owns now and he sells after the date of the wedding of the ksuba is a lien, there's a lien on the properties for the woman. There's a meshubah to the woman. That means even if the guy sells the properties to another guy, the woman can go because her date is first. She has a lien on the property. She can even go to the buyers and collect the land that was set. So now the question is, from when on does she collect? In other words, like this. We just said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that he said before in the Gemara, that they get it from the day it was written. Okay? Not from the time of the Edison. Don't forget, you have the Edison, and then later, before the wedding, they write the Ksuba. Years ago was a much different time. So the Gemara says, when she collects the Ksuba, is it from the date of the Ksuba, or is it from the date of the Edison? When does she collect the properties of the buyers?
Then, no?
Huh? But I'm saying, but according to the Gemara we said before, that the Ksuba's obligation begun Mishas Edison from the time of Edison, but the Ksuba is written later. So the question is, does she get it from the time of the Edison, that she can go to the buyers, or only from the time the Ksuba was actually written? So Amar Rav Huna says like this, Mane Masayim Meno Edison. A ksuba like this. There's the basic ksuba of a virgin 200 zuz, a divorcee or widowed 100 zuz. That's called the main ksuba. Ika ksuba. Then sometimes the husband could add whatever he wants. You know, especially by the Sfardim, they used to. $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion, whatever. They wanted that. So Rav Huna says like this. Mana Masayim, the 100 or 200, meaning the basic ksuba, she collects from the Edison. The Tesvis, but the additional mounts that the husband adds, Minanasurin from the time of the wedding. Okay? A guy could add, but Rav Huna holds that the basic ksuba, she collects from the Edison. But anything extra, which is above and beyond what the Chachamim instituted, she collects from the time of the wedding. But Ravasi, Amar Ravasi says no. Whether the basic ksuba or the additional ksuba, minan esuyin, she only collects from the wedding. Not from the Edison. Okay? Now, the question is, but we learned before, the obligation of the ksuba begins from the Edison. So how does Ravasi say it goes from the time of the nesuyin? So Ravasi learns that the woman forgives it. In other words, that because she gets the ksuba later, so it's like she automatically forgives her ability to collect the ksuba from the buyers from the time of the Edison. What? If a guy does kedusha with a woman and divorces her before the wedding, according to our Gemara, she collects the ksuba. Right? Yeah? But now, the woman had kedushin, got married. Okay? Later on, the husband dies and divorces her. From when on does she collect the ksuba? Rav Huna says, the primary ksuba from the Edison. Because that's when the fundamental obligation began. Rav Asi says, no. Even the basic ksuba, she can only get from the wedding. Why isn't it beginning from the Edison? Because the fact that she accepted the ksuba written on a later date shows she forgives the right that she would have to collect from the buyers from an earlier date. She's like meichel it, basically. Okay? So that's the argument to Rav Huna and Rav Asi. Rav Huna holds Even now, the basic ksuba she gets from the kedushin, even though the ksuba is dated later. And Rav Asi holds, no, she gets it from the wedding. So the Gemara says, how could Rav Huna say that she collects the ksuba from the Edison? For Oitma, we learned before in the Gemara, Itziyo love shtei ksubas. If a woman brings out two ksubas, achas shel masayim va'achas shel shleish meiris, one ksuba had 200, and one in the amount of 300, a later date. Now you have to be very careful. A woman can only collect one ksuba. Here she comes with a $200 ksuba from an earlier date. And a $300 ksuba from a later date. Right? And she produces two. Amir Ravuna says like this. Basalig bis masayim, if she wants to collect $200 only, mizman rishin, she collected from the first date, because that's what the first ksuba says. Shleish meis, if she wants to collect $300, gave him mizman sheni, she collects in the second date. Huh?
It's not the same as what.
In other words, she can only collect one ksuba. I told you that. She's not allowed to accept double ksuba. There's such thing as double jeopardy, double ksuba. There is no such thing. She collects one. So either she can collect a $300 one, or she can collect a $200 one. Now, the $200 one was earlier. The $300 one was later. Correct? Sometimes it would be beneficial for her to collect $200 from an earlier date. Sometimes it would be beneficial for her to collect a $300 ksuba from a later date. Why? So it's very simple. If the first ksuba was written January 1st, I'm going to use just Goyishanid, January 1st, that means any property the husband sold after January 1st is bound to her. She can go to the buyer and collect it. Right? So what happens like this? She has one ksuba January 1st, 200. A ksuba for 300 February 1st. Yeah? For 300. Now, January 15th, the guy sold the property. So if she's going to collect from the January 1st ksuba, she can collect that property, right? If she's going to collect the $300 ksuba from February 1st, she cannot collect from that property because that property was sold before she was bound to it, right? Now, sometimes it's better for her to collect the 300 than the 200. But sometimes, let's say the guy has no other things left. He has no other property to collect the ksuba from. So if she goes by the earlier date, she can at least get the field for the $200 ksuba. So that's what Rav Huna says. If she wants, she can collect from the earlier ksuba. If she wants, she can collect from the later ksuba. So he says like this. Amar Rav Huna, Basa Ligvis Masayim, if she comes to collect the first ksuba of 200, then gave him his manrishin. She goes to the first date, right, January 1st, and collects. Shleish meis, if she wants to collect the 300, then she has to go from February 1st, right? But the Gemara says, v'im isa, if you're going to say that Rav Huna holds a woman, collects the ksuba from the Edison, he says, tigva masai mizman rishin, umeya mizman sheni. According to Rav Huna, right, she should really collect $200, regardless, $200 from the first ksuba, because the Edison already binds her to the ksuba. Right? That's what he said before. Rav Huna said, the primary ksuba, you collect, even though the ksuba wasn't even written yet. Right? So why does Rav Huna say, she can either collect 200 from the earlier date, and 300 from the later date? Why can't she collect $200 anyway from the earlier date and $100 from the later date? Because that's what Rav Huna just said. From the Edison, she's going to get the ksuba even though it's not written. Right?
Why
Why would there be two ksubas?
I don't understand. The guy changed his mind and wanted to give her more. So he wrote a later ksuba with another $100.
Oh, so was that delightful?
That's why it's very problematic, even today, you should know. You can't have a fancy ksuba and another ksuba. Because then the woman's going to collect twice.
People do that?
No, I'll tell you what happened. In fact, somebody else called me yesterday. There was an artistic ksuba that the guy made a mistake in. The rabbi, he put you made a mistake in one of the, it happens, right? Okay, so now he can write a simple ksuba for the woman. But they want this big artistic ksuba. Right?
So, is it still valid even with a mistake?
No, it's not a kosher ksuba because there's a mistake in it. But nobody's going to know there's a mistake
but
in it.
It looks nice.
They will know it.
Understand? So what did I tell them to do? You have to make sure the artistic ksuba, there's no signature witnesses on it.
Erase.
No, just make sure there's no signature. No, they didn't sign it yet. I just make sure there's no signature because then it's not kosher anyway, automatically. So she'll never be able to come to a Beis Din later and say, oh, I'm collecting my ksuba. They're going to look at it right away. There's no witnesses. Right?
Where is exactly Beis Din?
Beis Din's a rabbinic court. So anyway, so the Gemara's question is like this. If Rav Huna holds, a woman collects the ksuba from the main ksuba, the basic ksuba from the Kedushin, regardless if the ksuba was written. So in this case of 200 and 300, why does he say if she wants to collect the 300, she collects it from a later date? No, she should anyway be able to collect 200 from the earlier date and the $100 from the later date. Right? According to Rav Huna, she should be able to do that.
Either this or that, not?
Yeah, but that's the Gemara's question. He's contradicting himself.
He said that the basic ketuba goes
from the Edison. So why can't she collect it from the first ketuba? She should be able to collect at least $200.
That's for sure, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then the extra 100 she'll collect later. Why does Ravuna say all 300 she could collect later? Only later. She should get the first 200 right away. So the Gemara says, so Quanti says, Quanti, you, Tigvi Chamesh Meyes Kulam, let her collect $500 for both ksubas. Masayim is Man Rishin, right? 200 from the first date, 300 from the second date, right? So, obviously, why not? It's a rhetorical question. Why not? El Chamesh Meyes, my time alegavia. Why doesn't she collect 500? Given the Lekosiv law, because he didn't write in the second ksuba, and he didn't write, Savisi Vesifa Loch Klas Me Amasayim, that I'm adding another 300 on the 200. Hachi Kamer, this is what it means. Okay? Rishin Gavaita Gvi Amasayim. If you collect from the first date, you will collect only 200. Im Isman Shmiya Gavaita, then you collect 300. Meaning like this. When the guy writes two ksubas, the very interesting concept the Gemara says. When the guy writes two ksubas, the guy, one for 200, and a month later he writes for 300. Yeah? Obviously, she can't collect 500. Right? Because then she's collecting two ksubas. Okay? So basically, what's the guy telling her when he writes two ksubas? He says to her, listen, I'm giving you a choice. You can either collect 200 from the earlier date or 300 from the later date. It's your choice.
Gambling.
Right. One minute. But he's not giving her an option for, he says, it's your choice. Either 200, so in other words, if she accepts this choice, like we learned before, she's meichelet, basically. That means she's saying, I agree to it. So therefore, I'm not going to collect the ksuba from the buyers. Because the whole question over here is about going to the buyers. Right? She can definitely collect the ksuba from the Edison. The question, does she go to the buyers from when?
But she's not going to end up going to the buyers till the guy dies or divorces her at some later
point. No, speaking obviously that they're divorced already. Well, it's not why she's collecting the ksuba already.
No, but what I'm saying, but by then time, she already knows if he sold property or not. So she makes her decision at the end, not at the beginning.
I understand. But therefore we're talking
so it's
now
not
when
a gamble per se.
Well, she is collecting a suba.
Right.
But she doesn't always know what he sold or what he didn't sell. And she might not know. She might not know what he has left.
He's not coming into property like now.
See, he's telling her clearly, listen, it's your option. Either 200 from now, from the earlier date, or 300 from the later date. But really, where does the obligation of the ksuba come from? From the Edison? And according to Ravona, she can even collect from the properties from the Edison. But here it's different because he's writing clearly, this is your choice. Okay? That means if she collects, as Rashi explains, if she would collect the second ksuba, she's meichel, she's forgiving and forgoing on the first ksuba.
But why wouldn't she if it's a greater amount?
Because I told you, if the guy sold property before the second ksuba,
correct,
then she'd be able to collect it. But now the guy has no property and no money, so how's she going to collect the 300? She'll be stuck with nothing.
When he dies, the estate isn't worth the 300 anymore.
Or divorces her.
Yeah, sometimes the less is more, sometimes the more is less.
Sometimes.
So he says, Hachanami, the same thing over here, the Gemara says. Hainu Taima, what's the reason, the Legavia, that she doesn't collect from the first, like Rav Huna said, the fact that the guy did not write in the Ksuba, I'm adding you 100 to the 200. Because that's not what he's writing. One ksuba is 200, one ksuba is 300. Right? So if the guy wanted to add the 300, he should write, I'm giving you 200 plus a 300. Right? But he's not writing that. One ksuba says 200, one ksuba says 300. Right? So therefore, he's saying, I'm not doing it. This that I'm adding, achule echalta l'shibud kama, you're giving up, okay? She's relinquishing the 44A1. Then she's giving up the first, meaning like this. The din is, a person has a right to do what's called mechila. A person can be meichel. Not only that, to do mechila, you don't even need a kinyan. If I just say I'm meichel you a debt, I don't have to pick up a handkerchief and do a kinyan with you. If I say to you I'm meichel the debt, it's gone. The fact that the woman accepted both ksubas, right? So then, like the Gemara says, when does she get the ksuba? So Ravona says, mana masayim from the Edison. The additional one, he says, but in a case where the guy writes two ksubas, he's basically saying, take your pick. If you pick the later one, you are not getting the earlier one. If you got the earlier one, you're not getting the... It's your choice. So the fact that she picked one over the next shows that that's what she chose, and the other one she's not collecting. Okay.
So the answer to Rav Huna, that it was like contradiction to Rav Huna before?
Yeah, because Rav Huna over here said it starts from the Edison. Right? So he says, no, a normal case, it that goes to the Edison. But over here, because there are two ksubas, he gave her the choice, and she picked one over the next. So it's not going from the Edison. That's all.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay, Amar Mar, so now the Gemara says something Rav Huna said before. He said, Iboya Hai Gavya, Iboya Hai Gavya. Rav Huna said it then. Two ksubas, one 200, one 300, right? So Rav Huna gave the choice up to the woman. She can collect 200, or she can collect the 300 one. Obviously, you can't collect both.
The same case?
Yeah, the same case we just learned. It was just repeating what Rav Huna said. Okay. But the Gemara has a question over here. Because Lema pleaded Rav Nachman. Because seemingly, Rav Huna says you can collect either one. That means one of the two are valid. Now, they're both valid. The 200 one is good. The 300 one is good. You want this? Take this. You take one of the two. But they're both good. Rav Nachman says a different din. Damer Rav Nachman, shtei shtaras hayetzim bezach hazeh, when there's two deeds, one field dated one after the next, bitul sheni asarishin. The second document nullifies the first. So now the question is like this. There was one ksuba 200. A month later, the second ksuba for 300. Why does Rav Huna say you can collect either one? why don't we say, like Rav Nachman says, that the second one nullifies the first one. So she should only be able to collect the three, according to Rav Nachman, Lucha'eda, she should only be able to collect the second one for 300. Right? So obviously, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are arguing. So Gemara says, no. Because Lavit Marla, we learned, Amr Rav Papa made the Rav Nachman, the E'es of Bodikla. If he added a palm tree in the second deed, the Tesis Kasfir, he wrote it to add to it, not to nullify it. Meaning like this. Normally, when you write two deeds, yeah, selling deeds, giving deeds, whatever, a deed, and they're exactly the same wording in both, the second one nullifies the first one. Because why did he write the second one? To nullify the first one. Right? But that's only, Nachman said, if you didn't add anything in the second deed. If you added a palm tree, then they're selling you a field. The first one says, I'm selling you a field. Second one says, I'm selling you a field and a palm tree. Then they don't cancel each other out. Because he's adding. So now you could pick which one you want.
It was 200 or 300.
Right. If it would be 200 and 200, then the second one cancels out the first one. But Rav Nachman says, Rav Huna's din is, he says, Hachanami, Ha'aisala midi. He's adding something to the second deed, meaning he's adding another 100. So then it doesn't, even Rav Nachman would agree, they don't cancel each other out. And therefore she can collect A or B, not both, but she can collect either A or B.
What? So why someone should write the second kesuba like exactly as the same first one, not adding anything, not changing anything?
Why would they do it? I don't know. They did.
Maybe they lost it and then they wrote one and then they found it again.
That is that's a good possibility. I'll give you an example. The din is what are you saying? A guy loses a kesuba. He can't live with his wife without a kesuba, so he has to write another one. Yeah, it's called ksuba di'irchs, a lost ksuba. What happens if they find the first one?
How's it gonna get?
First one is nullified?
Well, one of the two you gotta tear up. Right? One of the two you have to, but you can't come with both. Right? So here's a case, exact same, well it's a different text, because it just says, we lost the ksuba, we're rewriting it again. Right? Okay. But the bottom line is, it's the same ksuba. So technically, the second ksuba nullifies the first ksuba.
It is the same.
Well, that's what it is. It's the same.
It's a replacement.
So if anything, you should rip up the first ksuba.
The original one doesn't have any more.
Huh?
The original one doesn't have any more.
The same exact text. Is that mamish the same exact?
Maybe different idiom.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but it doesn't add any money or anything.
Someone lose the ketubah and they don't find those edim, they find the new edim. Is the same thing?
That's what you do.
That's what
you do. Truth of the matter is, if you lost the ksuba and you still have the first edim, and the edim remember it, then technically the edim can sign the ksuba again. You write a new ksuba, exactly like the first one, and the edim can sign it. You know where this can happen? It happens, by the way. The night of the wedding, they lose the ksuba.
In the wedding?
Yeah. You know what goes on in the wedding, yeah? So you give the kala the ksuba. They put it down somewhere. Yeah? They don't remember where it is, and they can't find it. It
has to be in the place.
It happens, by the way.
That happened with all the Babacher Rebbe's
ketubah. The Rebbe's ksuba was like that. But anyway, so they misplaced it, yeah? So now, but it's a day later. The witnesses remember that what they signed and what they did. So technically you can write the ksuba from the first date. Yeah. You can write the ksuba from the first date again. From yesterday. Right? And the witnesses can sign. Okay. When do you need new witnesses? If they're not around, they don't remember, whatever. 10 years later, you lose the ksuba. Yeah? 20 years later, you lose the ksuba. You have to rewrite the ksuba.
But they can't be married that night, or they don't have ketubah?
What? You have to give them something of collateral. The husband has to give the wife collateral. That's worth the ksuba.
New car.
No, expensive piece of furniture or something that's worth. Okay. Goof.
Happen on they can't find a ketubah after the first day.
It happens.
Well, when the rabbis have it?
Why should rabbi have it? Sometimes they make copies. And then the question is, a lot of times rabbis will fill out tuksubis. Not for the girl. The girl can only, they'll keep a copy themselves. So then if they lose it, they can just give the copy, but whatever.
In
America they don't do a b'chol, and that's so I think they do it. Gufa, okay, we said before Rav Nachman made a ruling. Amar Rav Nachman. Shnei shtaris ha-yetzim b'zachazah. We just had the Gemara Rav Nachman said two documents, one after another, right? And bitul ha-shen yasarishin. What did Rav Nachman say? The second document nullifies the first document. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, like we just said, Omer that Rav Nachman holds, agrees, the Eisa Badikla, the Tesis, if he added a palm tree, meaning he wrote it for addition, and therefore, he can, it doesn't nullify each other. Right? Either one you could take. Sigmar says, Pshita, it's obvious. Okay? Why? Rishin b'mecher, the first document, the deed is a sale. V'sheni b'matana, then the second deed, he gives through a gift, what he's adding. Le'yapis keichi hudakosivli. Why did he do it? To enhance his power, mishum dina de bar metzra. Because of the din of bar metzra. Huh?
What's that?
Bar metzra. Bar metzra is like this.
Not joining
property. Huh? Are you cheating? Believe it or not, there's a pasuk in Chumash that says, "Vasisa teva yosha b'nei Hashem." You should, in simple English, be a mensch. Okay, so there's a din like this. We learned this din already once. Here's two properties. Okay, my property, your property, neighbors. I'm selling my property. Okay, in English, it's called, I have to offer you first right of refusal. Right of first refusal. Okay? That means I have to go to you and say, do you want to buy my property? Okay? In Torah law, it goes even more. If I, this guy, I'm selling my property, I didn't even ask this guy about it. I didn't offer him to buy my property. I sold it to somebody else. Yeah? The din is, this guy has the right, halachically, to go to the buyer, pay him the price he paid for it, and take away the field against his will. Why? Why? Because the Torah says, listen, just think about it. If this guy wants to expand his property, the best place to do it is next door. Right? Then he makes one big field instead of somewhere else. It's much easier to run a double field next to each other than far away. So the Torah says, if this guy wants to buy it, right, you have to give it to him. To the extent that if you didn't sell, not give it, you have to sell it to him. To the extent if you didn't sell it to him, right, he can even go to the buyer and take it away. That's how powerful he is. But this din only applies by sale, not by gift. What happens if I have a field, you have a field, and I'm not selling my field. I'm giving him a gift. I'm giving him a gift, my field. Yeah? This guy cannot take it away from him. Why? Because by sale, you could tell him, buy a different property. You could tell the buyer, why did you buy this property? I want it. Yeah, and for me, it's better to have this property next to mine. You, go buy a property somewhere else. What are you going to tell him? Go get a gift somewhere else. Who's going to give him a gift? So therefore, the din of bar mitzvah doesn't apply by gift. It only applies by sale. So he says like this. When the guy sells the first field, yeah, and the second deed is a gift, because he added a palm tree to it, yeah, so then he did it, mishum dinu de bar metzra, because then he wouldn't have a problem with bar metzra. Okay? Now,
what's bar
mitzvah? I just said what the bar mitzvah is.
Adjoining property.
Okay, so the first deed was sale. Second deed, Rav Nachman says, because he added a palm tree that he's giving as a gift. Okay, what did he gain by it? Mishum din bar mitzvah. Because the guy wouldn't have a problem now with bar mitzvah. Because bar mitzvah only applies. In other words, why am I adding a second deed to this property? Because I don't want this guy to take away the field from you. If it's only I'm selling it, in other words, like this. What happens if I hate this guy? And I don't want to sell him the property. Yeah, you have this by neighbors, right? I don't want to sell the guy the property. But if I just sell you the property, he can come and get it and take it away. Right? So, why did the guy write a second deed as a gift? He says, because then this guy can't get it. Because the second deed is a gift. Okay?
But he gifts the whole field and the palm tree.
Right.
And the palm tree is located someplace else.
No, no, in the field.
How can you buy or sell a field without the tree in it?
It's like the...
No, there's a lot of dinim if I could sell you a field without the tree.
Like mineral rights.
Unless it's an orchard, yeah. Just you own the land, not the trees.
Yeah, I'm selling you the land, not the tree.
Like a co-op. I get it.
Okay, so he says like this. So therefore, Bekoshkein, more so the din would be, Rishin b'matana, if the first one was a gift, V'sheini b'mecher, and the second deed transferred through the sale, Damrinim we say, Mishum dina de balchevo de kosekein, because of the law of creditors, he wrote the second deed. Meaning like this. If I give you a piece of land, okay, let's discuss this whole thing before we see it inside. If I own land, and I owe people money, so there's a lien on all my properties. Right, that's why you have to make sure that the date in the document is not predated. Any predated document in halacha is not kosher. Why isn't it kosher? Because the buyers are going to get messed up. Okay, meaning like this. Any document, ksuba, any document. I write the ksuba, today is January 1st. Yeah? But I predated the ksuba to December 1st. A month before. Yeah? Now, when did the actual loan or ksuba take place? January 1st. That means, from when on is there a lien on my property?
January 1st.
Only January 1st. Correct? Now, if I write December 1st, right, that means, which is not true because the lien only begins January 1st, but now the lien on the properties begins a month earlier, which is not right, because there was never a lien December 1st, because the loan didn't take place until January 1st. So predated document is going to hurt people. Because the document says there's a lien on the property when there wasn't. Right? So the buyers are going to get messed up. The guy that bought a field, December 15th, right? He checked it out and he said there was no loans yet on the property.
No.
But now the document says December 1st. That means the document says there was a lien on the property. And he's going to lose his property. Right? So you have to write the proper date. Now, if I owe somebody money from the date of the document, there's a lien on the property to you, to the guy I owe money to. The same thing if I give away the field as a gift. The guy I owe money to, right, can go to the guy I gave the gift to and take away the field. If I sell the field, he can take it away. If I give it as a gift, he could take it away. Yeah? But there's a big bit difference between the two.
What's going to happen with the money of the buyer?
Because if I sell you the field, and he, who I owe money to, takes it away, yeah, the buyer will go back to me and get the refund.
Yeah.
because it's called achrayis. It's like insurance. Right? And even if you don't write it, that loch is, it's called insurance anyway.
Title insurance.
Which means, if I have a property that I sold you, and he's taking it away from me because of a debt, yeah? So now you're stuck without a property. Right? But you gave me $1,000 for the property. So what do? You come back to me. Either I give you another property or I give you $1,000 back. Correct? Yeah? But what happens if I gave it to you as a gift and it was taken away? Can you come back to me and demand another field? No. Because you didn't lose anything by it. Right? If you buy it, you paid $1,000 for the field, you're losing the $1,000 you paid for it. If I gave it to you as a gift, you're not losing anything. So you lost the gift. Big deal. Right? Now, the Gemara says, if the first document was a gift, and the second one was selling, right? So he says, why did he do it? What's the reason he did it? Because Dina Bal Chayvu the Kasev King. Because the law of creditors, that they can get the second one, right? But the guy from the gift can't. Eli Shneim B'Mecher, or Shneim B'Matana. But if both documents, right, are sale, or both documents are gifts, Bitul Shenius edition, that's when Rav Nachman's din applies, the second document nullifies the first document. Meaning like this. The Gemara is explaining Rav Nachman's din. Rav Nachman says a din that if you have two exact documents, one nullifies the next. Yeah?
The latest date.
What?
The latest date nullifies.
Yeah, the second document nullifies the first document. So Gemara explains, no. That's only when the both documents are exactly the same. But if one is sale and one is gift, or one is gift and one is sale, where there's a reason why he did it, where he changed one from the next for a reason, either there shouldn't be the laws of Bar Metzra of the neighbor, or for the debtors, so then we don't say the second document nullifies the first. In other words, Rav Nachman says a very simple logic. When does one later document nullify the first document? When they're both exactly the same.
But we had a different option. Either 300, 200...
No, then it's a different document. Right, then it's not the same.
Yeah.
But the Gemara is saying, the Gemara is just explaining Rav Nachman's din. When does Rav Nachman say, document 2 nullifies document 1?
It's exactly the same.
When it's exactly the same, so like, why are you writing it? Yeah. Well, what are you gaining by writing a second one? So therefore, obviously, you're writing it to nullify the first document. But if there's a change, either addition, like the Gemara said, makes over the palm tree, or the first one is sale, second one is gift, the first one's gift, the second one's sale, where there's a logical reason why he changed it, then it doesn't nullify it. You can pick which one you want. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, my timer. Okay? What's the reason? So why is it that the second document nullifies the first document? So he says like this. Rafram says, Eime Eiduya Eidele. Maybe the recipient admitted to him that the first document was fraud. It's fraudulent. Ravacha says no. Eime, the guy might say, the recipient might say, that Achuli Achle Shibuda, he waived the lien from the first document. Meaning, if he wrote it a month apart, so we're saying like this, the second document nullified the first document, meaning now he can only collect from the second document, which is a later date, which means he's limiting the land he can collect from because any land between the two documents he wouldn't be able to send. Or, Another reason, the first reason the Gemara says, is because he invalidates the first document. Meaning he says it's fraud. So Gemara says, my benayu, what's the difference between these two reasons? Either it's because he admits it was fraudulent document, or he, because the question, he meichel the lien to a later date. He says, ika benayu like this. Eruy sade, the disqualification of the witnesses, meaning, if he says that the first document was fraudulent, yeah, if the reason is, like you said, because the first document was fraudulent, you know what that means? That the guys that signed it are liars. So they're not kosher witnesses anymore. They lied. Once the guys lie, they're not kosher witnesses anymore. Until they do tshuva. Right? So if the reason is because it's fraudulent, that means the question is, what's the difference whether it's that or the guy just forgives the lien for that month? So the Gemara says, because then the question is on the witnesses. Are the witnesses not now, not kosher anymore? Or, l'shlume peda, if the guy ate fruits between the first two documents. Okay? If he already ate the fruits, does he have to pay it back? So if the first document was fraudulent, then he had no permission to eat the fruits, right? So he'd have to pay back the fruits that he ate. But if the reason is because it's just a later lien, but that's only from there on, what he ate, he doesn't have to pay. Or tax, property tax that he would have to pay. Okay? So then we'd have to pay the property tax.
Can you say one more time? Them.
One opinion says the first document, why is the second document nullify the first?
Because
by accepting the second document, saying the first document was false. That means I, two witnesses signed it. That means they're liars. So now, are they kosher witnesses anymore? No. But if the reason is because the guy just forgave the lien, that means the document is a kosher document. I just forgave the lien for that month. Correct? So then the witnesses would be kosher. That's one difference. Another difference is, if between the first month and the second month, yeah, the guy took the field and ate the fruits. Yeah? Now, if the document was fraudulent, did he have a right to eat the fruit?
No.
No. So you would have to pay for it. Correct? But if the reason is because later on they forgive the new debt, the lien later, but when he ate it, he was allowed to eat it. It was his. Right? So then it wouldn't be stealing. Or the property tax that he would have to pay. In other words, who would pay the property tax on the property? But now, the Gemara is going back to something we just learned before, and the Gemara answers, my havalot the ksuba. We never answered the question, when do you collect the ksuba from? Lavona said from the Edison, right? But now the Gemara says, what's the bottom line of the story? Because really before there was an argument between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says like this. Tashma, come, I'll tell you. The Amen of Yudah Meshmo, Mishim Rablazer, but Rav Shimon, Rav Yudah said the name Meshmo, the name of Rablazer, the son of Rav Shimon, Meyachoy. He says like Lavona said. Mane Masayim, Mino Edison. The 100, 200, you know, depending, psula, not psula, they get from the first. Taisus mina nesuin. But the additional ksuba, 300, that's from the wedding. Chachamim meimrim, no. Echadzeh, min anesuin. They only collect it from the nesuin. But the Gemara says, vehilchasel, bottom line. Echadzeh, veechadzeh, min anesuin. Only from the marriage. That's where she collects the ksuba from. Even though the lien of the ksuba is from the kedushin, but from when on does she collect the ksuba from the buyers? The Gemara rules when she actually wrote the ksuba, right before the chuppah.
Means if the Baal sold it, then she collects it after nisuin, right?
Right.
But if he didn't sell anything, and they wrote the ketubah from Erusin, she can collect it from that?
If what?
If she divorced or something.
Divorced, yeah, but she can't collect from the field.
Why not?
That's what the Gemara is saying. The Edison allows her to collect the ksuba, but only from the what the husband has, if he divorces her or dies. But not from the fields. The Gemara's question, when can she collect from the fields? So Rav Huna held the main ksuba from the Edison and the second additional amount from the marriage. Chachamim said, no, until you write the ksuba, she cannot collect the ksuba from the buyers.
But my question is, Chachamim also agree that if the Baal didn't sell anything,
right,
and they wrote
it, yeah, that she would collect. Yeah.
But only, yeah.
Mara said before, going back so much. Now the Gemara says, new Mishnah. Okay, this is, there's a din like this. What's called Meitzi Shemra, right? A guy marries a girl, supposedly she's a virgin. He says to her, he gets married. He says, you're not a virgin. And he says to her, I have proof that you committed adultery between the Edison and the wedding. Okay? And she says it's not true. So what do? You take out the girl, and he has to prove it, basically, that she committed adultery. And
that she didn't.
Right. Well, he has to prove that she did.
He has to prove it first.
And then he divorces her without a ksuba. But what happens if it's a lie? Okay, so then you have to pay the fine for being meitzi shemra.
Slash.
Huh? Slash.
Michael.
What? No, she has to. He has to. Yeah, because he's lying, but also he has to pay the money.
Okay.
Yeah. Has to pay a hundred seller, and lashes, and he cannot divorce her. Right, all the things. He gets malchus for lying, plus he has to pay her a fine of $100, 100 zuz, plus he can never divorce her because he ruined her reputation. Yeah. Okay, now it says like this. So the Mishnah starts off, Hagiyedis Shinizgaida Bita Ima. The Gemara is going to explain why it has to be. Basically, the din is like this. If the mother converted with the baby, yeah? Now, under Kedushin, under 3 years old, I mean, okay? A girl under three is not considered committing adultery because her virginity comes back. Okay? Now, in order for a woman, okay, to get killed to committing adultery, because the Torah says if she was guilty, you take her out and you stone her. That's a punishment if the husband was right. She has to be a virgin, she has to be a Naira and a Narusa. Okay? Now, if any of these three qualifications are not met, she gets chenek instead of skila. You can learn Sunday morning. Okay. Now, it says like this. A geyedis that the girl converted with the mother, hareizu bechenek. She's liable to strangulation. Okay? Why? Because even if she was less than 3 years old when she converted, and then when she converted, which was a virgin, she's still going to get chenek, okay, rather than skila. Again, when does a girl get skila? She's a naira, right? Plus, she's a virgin. Yeah? Plus, that she, whatchamacallit, an arusa, an adairison. Now, what happens if a girl under three converts? That's the case what the Mishnah is talking about now. A girl under three converts, meaning like this, a mother was a shiksa. She had a baby kid under 3 years old. The mother converted together with the girl. Okay? So now she officially became a Jew as a virgin. Okay? Now, she's a naira, who's a virgin, who committed, the husband accuses her of committing adultery. The din is, the Mishnah saying, that even though it's proven that she committed adultery, she doesn't get stoned, she only gets choked. Chet, strangulation. Why? Why is this case an exceptional case? Because the Torah says, she committed a shameful act be Yisrael. No, because she committed an adultery act in Israel. That means she has to be born a Jew. She has to be born a Jew. This girl wasn't born a Jew. Why does the Torah add she did despicable thing and the people of Israel for the shameful act in Israel? Why does the Torah have to add those words? A shameful act, period. Why does it add in Israel?
It's different in Israel.
So the Torah doesn't mean Israel the country. It means she has to be born a Jew to get stoned instead of chenek. Meaning, normally a girl, a married woman, who commits adultery gets chenek. Okay? No. A married woman gets chenek. From Edison, she gets skila.
Chenek is worse or?
Chenek is better. She comes Sunday morning. We just learned it. Skila, dalach zek de chachamim. Skila, sreifa, hedek, and chenek. The pshimin holds sreifa is the worst. And hedek is the worst. Not, the least, not chenek. Okay? Skila, sreifa, hedek, and chenek. Chenek is the least of them all. When the Torah says, meis yumas, that's the word meis yumas, it's chenek. Okay? The Torah says, if you commit adultery, meis yumas. Now, this girl, meis yishemra, is a chiddush that she gets skila. Okay, because it was from the Edison. A girl commits adultery from the Edison, from the Kedushin, she gets skila. Not chenek. In other words, the punishment for a Kedushin girl is worse than a married woman.
Why?
Why? Because when she's married, she's out of the father, so she's not embarrassing the father. This girl, because she didn't move in with her husband yet, it's only after the Kedushin, she's embarrassed as Avia Michalelis. She's definitely defiling her father's home also. So the punishment, I mean, she gets killed, but the punishment is stricter.
But if she converted,
yeah.
If she converted, she's a convert with her mom, right? So she's Jewish now.
Okay.
So the Torah applied to her in Israel.
No, the fact is that Yisrael means she has to be born Jewish.
How do we learn that?
That's what the Gemara learns. Because otherwise the word in Yisrael doesn't make sense.
Oh, why would the Torah? It's extra.
The word be Yisrael is extra.
Yeah.
The Torah says, Ki nevala asa. Period. Of course we're talking about Jews. Why does the Torah have to be Yisrael?
It has to be Jewish.
Means she has to be born Jewish.
Is chenek similar to hanging?
No, chenek is strangulation.
Well,
the Gemara says they put a thick rope,
yeah,
inside a thinner rope, softer rope,
okay,
and then they put a rope around the neck and two guys pull.
Oh, ISIS started.
They got it from us.
That's Herod with the knife.
No, they did that.
Okay, what happens? Ein lo lepesach beisav. What happens if the Torah says it's the husband, she has to be executed at the door of her father's home? Or what happens? Oh, and therefore also, ein lo lepesach beisav. When you kill her, you don't have to kill her in her father's home.
By Yerushin?
No, by this Gieris. And v'lei meir selah, she's not entitled for the 100 shekel either. Why? Because she's not a Jew. Now she's Jewish. But she has to be born, because the Torah says the whole din is b'Yisrael. So b'Yisrael, the guy gets killed, she gets skila, but here she doesn't, because she's not a Jew, she's in the chenek. It doesn't get killed on her father's doorsteps, because that only applies to by a Jew. And the fine of 100 zuz also only applies to a Jew.
And the fine, the 100 zuz is toward the girl?
Well, if she's a knight, it goes to the father. When she's married, it goes to her.
Oh, from the person that committed with her.
Right. Now, what happens? Haydasi shalei begdusha v'leidasi begdusha. She was conceived. What happens to a pregnant mother converted? So the conception was when the mother wasn't Jewish, but the birth, she's Jewish. Right?
Right.
The mother converted when the mother was pregnant.
She wasn't Jewish, no?
The mother wasn't Jewish. Okay. But in the middle of her pregnancy, she converted.
Now the mother's Jewish.
And then the baby was born when the mother was Jewish.
So it's a Jewish.
But she wasn't conceived when the mother was Jewish.
So what's her status?
1 minute. She doesn't have to go through Gaitis, but she's a Ger. She doesn't, because the Gaitis of her mother was good for her, but she's a Ger. A Kain couldn't marry her.
Is it different than the first case?
Huh?
Is it different than the first case?
Yeah. The first case when she was born as a Shiksa, the girl was already born and then she converted. So then she gets chenek. So over here the Gemara says then she'll get skila, but she doesn't have Pesach Beis Aviyah and she doesn't get the 100 shekel either. Okay, but the only difference is she gets skila instead of chenek. What happens? Hayidase v'leidase b'kedusha. She was conceived after the mother converted and she was born after the mother converted. Then he's 100% Jew. 100% Jew. Okay, we're going to leave this for next time.